The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Receiving this message.
We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 461.DE2849, certificate number 12129. The Fenian Raids.
Welcome to Canada.
Hold it right there, Canuck.
As you and I have discussed many times, the main reason why we founded this project and our delivering these gold records to the future is so that millennia of future little thinking trilobites,
yes,
will know about our deep love of and the greatness of the Dominion of Canada.
Absolutely. I celebrate their entire catalog.
What did you do on Canada Day this year, as you say, to celebrate them?
Well, we typically in my family cover ourselves with maple syrup.
Put Anne Murray on the... on the turntable.
And Neil Young. And we dance the Canadian dance.
Yeah, and what would you say that national dance of Canada is?
It's kind of, if you kind of shuffle side to side and snap your fingers on the one and three.
Wait, is there another way to snap your fingers?
Yeah, on the two and four.
What?
Yeah, I know.
Holy cow.
We'll work on it.
Well, I mean, living here in Seattle, of course, we're close enough to Canada that some of that...
A lot of that
whiteness kind of seeps down.
You know, you and I can work on the two and four. I wouldn't jump right into it. But,
yeah,
it's just you have to kind of...
When I first heard about that distinction in high school, I realized that I was incapable of clapping on the one and three.
Yeah, right. It's very...
Like you just grew up hearing gospel choirs, and you're like, yeah, here's how you clap.
It's hard to do,
like,
actually.
Like, who the hell?
And yet audiences around America have astonished musicians for centuries.
What do you think? I don't want to say you're not the most soulful band in America, but when you look out there, when are people clapping during a real long winter's banger? You're doing live shows lately.
Well, we are. Well, the thing about a long winter's show, and this is one of the things about the long winter's music that people don't... they don't fully grok going in, is that I change time signatures multiple times in most of our songs, at least once.
Even the ones where it's not written. You'll just...
just like, whoop, everybody, hold it.
Live, you'll be like, this is the 7-4 break.
One, two, and... So if you're trying to groove, like really get into a groove with the long winters, you're going to have a sophisticated sense of time to keep...
Or an extremely unsophisticated one, right?
Well,
if you're just so stoned out of your mind that you're just like,
bouncing from side to side.
And you don't even notice when it goes 3-4.
I mean, eventually it will come back around. That's exactly the wonderful thing about time signatures. Eventually you'll be on the right beat.
Stopped drummer is right twice a day.
Unless it's a 4-4 song and you're clapping on the 1 and 3. You're never going to come around.
Canada, never right. We sometimes hear from Canadians who feel like we are insufficiently supportive of their mighty dominion.
I think they're talking to you in that. I think they feel like you are not sufficiently supportive, the same way that Australians sometimes weigh in and say, why does Ken hate my country?
Nobody ever says
that. Whereas
no Australian has ever said that.
I love all Anglophone countries as I love all countries, because I celebrate all the people.
I like how you love, I'm so open-minded, I love all Anglophone countries. Please ask no follow-up questions.
As well as okay. Francophone countries and Sinophone countries.
Lusophone
countries.
That's Portugal. What's the name for Spanish? Hispanophone? That sounds terrible.
Hispanophone?
Would you call me on the Hispanophone?
It's like the scene in 30 Rock where Liz Lemon asks Selma Hayek where she's from, and she says Puerto Rico. Somebody says, oh, she's Puerto Rican, and then both she and Jack Donaghy go, that doesn't sound right. Is that? Can you call someone Puerto Rican? It's a very New York joke, I guess it's apropos here.
I think the Hispanophone is what the superheroes used to call the police, but it's got to be like Blue Beetle or somebody.
Oh,
the Hispanophone's ringing.
Yeah, right.
It's Blue Beetle.
They're arriving in their green Ford Falcons.
El Escarabajo Azul, or however you say
it. But no, I do celebrate all the world's people, and I celebrate the Australians and the Canadians. It's you that's down on everybody.
No, we talk about how much we love Canadian culture all the time. The problem is, I don't like...
You hate the Blue Jays.
No, I don't mind the Blue Jays. I hate Blue Jays fans, and by fans, I mean...
Fans from Vancouver.
People who don't follow the Blue Jays... but pour into Seattle for 3 days every summer from Edmonton.
So why are you so mad at the Australians?
I have nothing against the Australians. You're inventing this.
No, I don't think so. I have right here signed affidavits.
128 Australians.
People who wrote me and said, I am so mad at Ken and I'm going to take it out on you.
No, Australia loves me because they actually aired U.S. Jeopardy there weirdly.
Really?
Can you imagine? You're watching some other country's talk show and they're asking questions about like Butterball turkey commercials and you're like, we don't have that here, mate.
Well, I can't imagine it, as you probably can, because we've both tried to watch British quiz shows.
It's true.
Which are absolutely incomprehensible.
Well, I love watching something like Only Connect because you'll be like, oh, I know this one. These are the, because it'll be something that we have too, you know, like, oh yeah, these are the eras of the Paleocene or whatever. And then it's like, these are the four towns that James II passed through on his famous road to Avonburyston.
I was always impressed driving in the UK and listening to the radio, because there are quiz shows on the radio. And they like call-in shows where everyone that called in, even like with Scouse accents and, you know, like Southern like chappies or whatever, they all had a complete knowledge of the works of Shakespeare. They'd be like, oh, that's a sonnet. That's from the sonnet number 72. And I'm like, how the hell?
Your accent makes you sound dumb, sir. Yeah.
Hey, how dare you know things?
I don't think that's a little problematic of you.
Well, there are so many accents in the UK. I can't tell them any of them apart. Some of them sound dumb. Some of them sound fancy.
Just for the record, we live very close to Canada, and that's by choice. We love the Canadians.
Yes.
We love our peaceful border. It's got a peace arch. That's how peaceful it is.
It does. It used to be more peaceful.
It's true. But before that, it was a lot less peaceful, which is the subject of this entry.
Oh, right. We've had several skirmishes.
We've done an entry about the Pig War.
When we were children, though, you could just sort of drive up to the border, and there'd be somebody in a straw hat.
It was like the entrance to Toontown. You'd drive through the Peace Arch, and suddenly the sky would be animated.
Yeah.
Flowers would be doing a very short dance.
But then after 9/11, everybody got like double, triple serious about everything. The first time I ever saw a Canadian police officer dressed in that now ubiquitous black, like combat.
Listen.
Fatigues, where I was like, why are you dressed like that?
You guys had the Mountie uniform, and you screwed it up.
Yeah.
You guys had the best uniform.
So beautiful. Did you know The Mountie uniform is the property of the Mounties, and when you leave the Mounties, you don't take your uniform, you have to give it back.
Just like working at Disneyland.
Is that right? You can't take your Disney outfit? Oh, I see, your princess
if you're Tigger
costume.
Or whatever.
But, you know, I went on for a while there, I was like, well, I'm going to get myself a complete Mountie uniform. And I searched and searched and searched, and all I could find was cadet uniforms from the Mountie cadet program.
Because those you can keep?
I guess.
If you're in Mountie ROTC?
I mean, I found them. They had all had their gold buttons taken off, but...
Are people making replica Mountie uniforms for this reason? Because I'm sure that's illegal in Canada, but
they can't
touch us if you and I wanted to start making fake Mountie uniforms.
If you want a Mountie uniform that like pulls on over your regular clothes for Halloween, or I think
that pulls off if you're a sexy Canadian stripper.
If you want a sexy Mountie outfit with a tiny skirt,
yeah.
I think you can buy those, but not like a full wool tunic with all of the...
Edible Mountie uniform made of like that fruit roll-up stuff?
I bet you there, if there wasn't one, there will be one by the end of the day.
Why are we talking about the Mounties?
Boy, only you know.
Because they switched to that paramilitary.
Yeah, that paramilitary stuff. I'm so bored of it. Like, go back to pink uniforms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, get out of your cyber trucks, Canada. Yeah,
exactly. Well, and also here in the United States, why do you think you're such a badass?
No, I don't want to blame Canada.
No.
Country is ahead of the U.S. in... weird paramilitary vibes for law enforcement.
Yeah, you are a police officer in Missouri.
You should.
Why are you in combat?
You should be spinning a billy club on your finger
with a tall hat.
Yeah, exactly.
Get a tall,
get a
impractical
Keystone
hat.
Cop's hat
with a feather in it,
and run back and forth in an alley. I love Canada so much. I got the little magical car. I got interviewed by a Canadian's customs official, so I have the little card where I can just drive through the border like it's 1974.
You have LexisNexis or whatever.
I have LexisNexis, yeah. The Canadians will let me look things up in their legal database. What did the Queen's Council think about Lake Winnipeg fishing rights, I wonder?
You know, for a long time, because I have the card that gets you across the border, and it's so funny because there's a separate card to get in and out of Mexico, and there's a separate card, like my card will... I can arrive and depart from the United States via cruise ship or by walking. But if I'm in an airplane, it's a separate set of cards.
Got to do Nexus, baby.
And then you can go back and forth across the Canadian border. But I had a little girl.
Hey, I don't want to hear this story.
And they wouldn't let her have a card until she was a certain age. And so we'd pull up and they'd say, you know, I'd say, I have the card. You know, the old lady here has the card, but the kid doesn't have a card. And they're like, well, you don't have cards then.
I had to take my kids up to Bellingham to give them a little, so they could get a little talking to by the Canadian Customs and Immigration folks. And I think that really scared them straight.
Oh, is that right? They stopped doing drugs?
Those kids were trouble. They went home and threw out their spray paint.
Mm-hmm. Started reading the Bible again.
Exactly. Canada's famously the most Bible-loving country. I guess French
some
Canada.
Some of them, yeah.
But there was a time, John, when it was not a peaceful utopia up at the Canadian border.
You're saying not that Canada wasn't a peaceful utopia, which it's always been.
It was not.
Oh.
That's the point of the story.
Oh, well, let's hear it.
It's a lawless wilderness, as was, and someday will be again, most of the United States.
Yeah, that's right.
We talked about the Pig War and the San Juans.
Yes.
But that's one of many, many skirmishes that there were lumberjacks in Maine and New Brunswick throwing, pork and beans at each other, bacon at each other.
They work all night and they sleep all day. That's one of the things about them.
And that makes them cranky and they go to war?
Among other things.
I don't know when they would go to war if they're working all night and then sleeping all day.
There's the intermediate periods, like in Twilight. The morning and, yeah, like, in the afternoon.
All right, magic hour, everybody. Places. And this was a time before there was really... Canada. I mean, there was the province of Canada, but at the time this story, you know, the time these skirmishes take place that we're talking about.
Still part of the UK.
Right. It's not just a British colony. It's a series of like a bajillion British colonies. Like modern day Canada is just, it's like the Great Lakes region in what is now southeastern Ontario and southwestern Quebec.
Are you saying that that's all that Canada is?
That's all that Canada is to me. No, that's all Canada was.
Oh, I see.
Like on a map, you can see the borders of Canada. And then the British colonies in northern North America continue, but that's you know, what are today the Prairie Provinces are like Rupert's Land.
Oh.
And then the Northwest Territories stretch up from Alberta, and the Maritime Provinces are all kind of their own thing. There's Newfoundland and New Brunswick, and these are all separate colonies, just like Virginia and Massachusetts and the Carolinas were.
So all of Northern Canada was not any kind, it was not considered part of Canada, all the yeah, water
like,
up yeah, there?
No, Canada, like just as it does today, Canada stops like 50 miles from the border, basically. And they even said Canada West and Canada East, which is very modern sounding to me. But yeah, in Canada the 19th West. Century, that's like, that's Ontario and Quebec, basically.
Canada West is Ontario?
Yes.
Wow. So what is British Columbia?
British Columbia looks like it has the modern contours of British Columbia, and it's called, wait for it, British Columbia.
British Columbia.
It's the one part of British Canada that's kind of survived on the map unscathed.
So really, it's Columbia.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Well, I mean, I think they knew that maybe south of the 49th
there were
parallel.
Other Columbias?
We're living currently in the non-British Columbia, right?
Oh.
Although we have, you know, it depends on when you're talking about.
Why don't we start calling the Pacific Northwest non-British Columbia?
Just like the people in the other Vancouver are like, we're not in Vancouver, BC, damn it.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
What does VA mean to me?
A place for my daughter to call home. Thanks to the VA Home Loan.
A new lease on life. The best healthcare team I've ever had is here at VA.
And education and the opportunity to open doors I never thought possible with my GI Bill.
The financial support I need to manage the disabilities I develop because of my service.
Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
So, and this, as you can imagine, in a time when all of North America was pretty sparsely populated. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of us had got there yet. We'd done a pretty good job of finishing off the people that were here before. not good in an ethical sense. It's a wilderness.
Yeah,
and in a
wilderness,
that's where you get
bears,
but also smugglers and counterfeiters.
So, trappers.
Trappers aren't bad. You're saying that like they're the criminals. Smugglers and trappers.
Have you ever been in a borderland tavern full of trappers? Because I have, and they are bad men.
Well, at this time, they're the law-abiding ones because it's just two important things happened during the Civil War, the United States Civil War.
Oh, boy. I can't wait to hear what the second one was.
Okay, three. First, the slaves get freed.
Okay.
But that's... That doesn't affect Canada so much. We think, you know, we think of Canada as the utopian destination of the Underground Railroad, and that's where slaves could be free. But in fact, it was kind of a wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Yeah.
During the Civil War,
that checks out.
Are you saying that's what it is today?
Well, yeah, you can see the residue of it.
Like just as in the 20th century, a lot of Civil War draft dodgers ended up there.
Uh-huh.
And Carter never pardoned these guys. They just went rogue and started hunting beavers.
I had a brother that did it.
In the Civil War?
No, well, I guess, depending. I mean,
I don't.
But he did go to Vancouver to escape the draft during the Vietnam War.
And did he get pardoned and come back, or did he stay?
I don't think anybody ever pardoned him. I certainly didn't.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
But if you've been to Windsor, Canada, you for sure know what it's like to go to a wretched hive of scum and villainy.
I'm not going to agree with that since one who famously hates Canada.
Right, right, right. I don't hate it. I love a wretched hive of scum and villainy the next guy.
When POWs would escape from prison camps, they would, on either side, although it would be a lot easier if you're in a northern camp, you would make a run for the border, as we say. And honestly, a lot of Confederates did head up there because they thought that would be a safe space to plan their firebombing of New York City or assassination of Abraham Lincoln or, you know, whatever they had in mind to preserve the great cause of states' rights.
Well, and one of the...
And I'm doing finger quotes.
the premises of the Confederacy was that they were going to be acknowledged by England. And that lasted pretty far into the war.
That is actually one of the inciting events of our story as well. So I guess if we're going to say other important things that are happening during the Civil War, we should talk about how the UK was trying to have it, or the Great Britain, trying to have it both ways.
They were like, we want that cotton and tobacco, but we're also against slavery, so...
We're going to build. So they built, the North was most pissed about is they built a ship called the Alabama, which became a kind of a cause celebre Confederate cruiser, basically a pirate ship, taking down millions of dollars in 1864 dollars of Northern bounties and really pissing off the Americans who wanted reparations. You built this pirate ship.
Yeah.
But that does seem like a funny kind of legal theory. Hey, you guys built this pirate ship. You are, like, they didn't build it as a pirate ship.
No.
I can't imagine the shipyard in Liverpool was like, and you want the black flag, right?
You're not going to do a Liverpool accent?
That is my Liverpool. You want a black flag, don't you?
I do feel like, given the complicated nature of the way that nations supply other nations with sort of lend-leasey kind of war materiel, that the Alabama wasn't just like, oh, here, it's a sweet-natured little ship that, oopsie.
You could do humanitarian stuff with it.
Yeah.
Right?
It's the play both sides against the middle project.
So that that antipathy around the Alabama claims will come up later in the story. But the second thing that was going to happen was... There had been a massive wave of Irish immigration into America.
Oh boy, because we needed police and firemen.
You're still a no Irish need apply guy. There was not as many potatoes as there used to be. Again, thank you to the British. And as a result, the Irish surged into America, and this newly patriotic set of Americans who were not particularly a moneyed class, and also really wanted to look like patriotic new citizens in hopes of staving some of the prejudices that you still feel, apparently.
Yeah.
They decided en masse that they would join the Union Army. I mean, they didn't all have a meeting.
Oh, that's a pretty good idea. I see how that goes. It's a fast track to citizenship.
They're probably already citizens, but it's a fast track to acceptance.
I read a missive the other day. A missive from Ireland. Saying, Americans, when you come here on vacation, we don't care that your great-grandparents were from Ireland. We really don't. We don't want to hear about it. Like, every single American has a story. Like, just stow it.
There are now 100 million Americans.
Like, come and visit. We're very excited. And, I mean, if you're talking to your host family or whatever, that's fine. But, like, do not introduce yourself.
In the pub, we don't care.
Yeah.
But then why do they have that picture of President Kennedy still in the pub?
Well, they want a little bit of that, but they don't want to hear about it from, like, Joe Schmo and Maisie Glotz, you know, coming from whatever, San Francisco. Oh, yeah, I'm part Irish.
Do they have to pretend when Biden goes over and is like, this is where my family was from?
I think so.
Yeah, good job.
I mean, the thing about you and I.
Me.
The you and me I.
Yeah,
you,
that's right.
The thing about I and you.
The thing about
we, is that when we go to Wales, people are very excited to hear that we're from Wales because who's from Wales?
Well, many people are, but they don't know or care, right?
Maybe that's what it is.
They're like, nobody ever is okay admitting it.
They're like, I don't have eyebrows. Why?
So these new Irish Americans join the Union Army and are disproportionately killed. Spoilers.
Uh-oh. Wait a minute. I thought they were Hibernian.
Hibernian?
Yeah, that's what I meant.
I think that's Scottish.
Well, it is Scotland, but they came over to. It's the Scots-Irish, right? They do the. And aren't they like
some
all
of them are,
fierce
some of,
fighters?
Some of them are from Ulster, but whether they're Protestant or Catholic, I think we can agree. The Irish all love to fight. And
yeah, right.
That, is that racist?
Well, I mean, we've already angered at least half of our Irish listeners. Why not go the whole hog?
Do they count as Anglophone or are they Gaelophone?
Depends. Are they from weird little villages on the very coast that didn't ever get Anglophonized?
No, some of them are getting Gaelophone, re-Gaelophonized
I'm
now.
I'm not sure if that's going to work.
The they love to fight, but apparently they're not super successful fighters.
They're bad at it.
Let's just say they don't get the plum behind the lines position.
Yeah, that sounds like me.
When these all Irish brigades are sent to Antietam, and 60% of the brigades do not survive Antietam. At Fredericksburg, 545 more members of these Irish brigades die. At Gettysburg, there's 530 left, and 320 are killed. There's still an Irish brigade's monument there with a Celtic heart and a sad-looking wolfhound that you may have seen if you visited.
Now, if I were an Irish descendant conspiracy theorist...
Whoa, an IDCT?
I would say that this is statistical evidence that the Irish are being thrown into the breach.
Well, that's what the Irish were saying as early as like 1863.
Mm-hmm.
So the news of these higher-than-average casualty rates get back to New York and Boston, along with news of the soon-to-pass Conscription Act, which is the one that says, we need more bodies, but if you've got $400, it doesn't have to be your body.
Yeah,
you could find a poor Irish body.
Right.
And that's what leads to, of course, famous draft riots in New York, which I'm sure we've talked about at some point.
Well, this is the plot of that Martin Scorsese film that was kind of watchable.
The Irishman?
In parts. No, the other one.
Gangs of New York.
Yeah.
What if that were the plot of 7 Years in Tibet? Wouldn't that be crazy?
Yeah, that would. But that's the one where Brad Pitt has a really bad German accent, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like really bad.
But unrelated to the good Irish accents in Gangs of New York, right?
Well, yeah, okay. There are some good actors in Gangs of New York. Let's say that. Not all of them are good, but a couple of them. Some of them are good.
Who are we against? Cameron Diaz? Who's the woman in that movie?
Cameron Diaz is really bad in that movie. But you know what's got a good Irish accent is Brad Pitt as the traveling Roma in, character in
whatever that guy
Lock, Stock, and Three Smoking Barrels.
Two. And is it Snatch or is it Lock, Stock, and Two?
I think it might be Snatch. And it's not an Irish accent.
Also, I said Lock, Stock. Yeah, Irish travelers are maybe not actually Irish. It was just
let's
like,
not get into that.
We don't like these people and we don't like the Irish. Let's call these guys.
I feel like that's a group of people that we don't, that make up a large portion of Omnibus
of our listeners
that we don't want to anger.
Well, in the future, when the Irish travelers are the only survivors of the coming apocalypse.
I see that.
Because they had their little fortune teller wagons.
And they're like, hey, they're talking about us finally.
That are lead lined.
They think the future's all octopus, but no.
So the Civil War gives us a Canadian border where, I mean, there's this history of, we've talked about the history of skirmishes. I mean, for crying out loud, we burned Toronto and they burned Washington. It was not a nice border.
No, that's true. Although neither of those cities is on the border.
No.
I guess Toronto.
But the border
closer.
Had to be crossed.
Yeah, right.
If you're going to go burn down the White House and scare Dolly Madison. And by the way, Canada, I know you all heard in grade 3, because you don't have third grade there, you have grade 3. I know you all spent 6 months on how we burned down the White House. This is the equivalent of the Irish not wanting to hear about our ancestry. Hey, Canadians, we do not want to hear, oh yeah, well, we burned down the White House.
Is that really a popular thing in grade 3 up there? Because we don't talk about it at all.
Well, that's the funny thing. Like, they act like it's the linchpin of American history. And we're like, what now? The War of 1812? I don't even know what year that happened.
And I thought it was against the British, but it was really against the Canadian
British. Well, Canadians say we.
Yeah.
It's a very expensive. So British, you know, redcoats detached to Canada came down and burned down Washington, D.C.
I see.
I don't know if a modern day Torontonian should be saying we there. But
now that you talk about it, now that you mention it, it was the linchpin of American history.
Well, I mean, we rebuilt. The White
that's
House
true.
Is still there. I've seen it in Doonesbury.
America strong.
America strong. That's right. Remember when James Madison was standing in the wreckage of the White House? We will rebuild.
We can't hear you. I can hear you, he said famously.
So you've got a border that's basically just a lawless no man's land of awful people, and you've got a bunch of pissed off Irish veterans, and that's always a recipe for fun.
Yeah, wow. Thinking about that. No thanks.
Let's introduce one particular pissed off Irish veteran. John O'Neill, born in County Monaghan, actually lived through the Irish potato famine, and his grandfather's stories of the crown's oppression of his homeland, which, by the way, should be free.
Did you say County Monaghan?
Monaghan?
Banana hammock?
County, he's born in County Banana Hammock.
Uh-huh.
But he emigrates to the U.S. again because of a shocking lack of potatoes, much, much, much fewer than the Irish were accustomed to.
Right.
And eventually,
we have so many potatoes here. That's one of the things about it.
That's
us.
What they had heard. They'd seen the license plates, and they're like, Idaho, famous potatoes. We're going to go there.
So Monaghan is a county right between what we now think of as Northern and Ireland proper.
It's I think at the time it was part of what was then called Ulster.
Right. So there we go. It's the fighting Scots.
But he is not Scotch-Irish which is just a kind of a thing we invented in America, so we didn't have to say that presidents like Andrew Jackson were Irish, I think. We wanted to say, "Oh no, he's Protestant. It's the good kind."
Oh, the good kind. Not how I normally think of him.
Well, that's how 19th century racist Americans would have thought of it.
Right.
Like, I don't think Scotch-Irish is actually a term that's used, for example, in Ireland. It's just a way we chose to say, no, these are the Ulster Protestants, these are the good ones.
But I don't think at any point did we consider the Scots-Irish good, or at least not my people in Ohio.
Compared to Irish Catholics.
Oh, right, there's Irish Catholics. One way there's no way they're good.
Well, they had assimilated sooner, judging by the fact that Andrew Jackson and I think James Polk were president 120 years before, more than that, before Kennedy.
Right.
So, and Biden, we got two Irish Catholics now. So John O'Neill, he joins the army, which takes him west. I think he fights in the Utah War, which was, a skirmish against the people of my people, the people of Deseret,
right.
Trying to keep the government out of their marriage licenses.
You guys weren't,
remember when we burned down your White House?
You weren't, actually actively supporting the Southern cause. You just had your own weird cause out in the desert.
Exactly.
The high desert.
We were anti
states' rights.
The Union.
No, you had one state.
It's true. We were pro states' rights.
Yeah, you were.
And have we talked about this on the show? That often in the Northern abolitionist press, even though there was no slavery in Utah, these were often considered the two twin enemies of American democracy, slavery and polygamy.
Even now.
And continue to be. And continue to be. Like, I'm not in favor of slavery and polygamy, for sure.
Imagine them together, slavery and polygamy.
I think there's a long history of that in much of the world, honestly.
Yeah.
So John O'Neill, our man, deserts during the Utah War, heads to California. And I think he's in the... So I think as a result, he's somehow still, when the Civil War begins... He's able to rejoin up despite his desertion, I think, and joins the California Cavalry in the Civil War, later relocates.
Which is a euphemism?
Yeah, he joins the California Cavalry, if you know what I mean. We all thought he was as straight as anything, but then he joins the Indiana Cavalry. At some point, I think he just leaves the army and heads back and gets married. By the end of the war, he's a captain, maybe a colonel, I think. And he's relocated to Tennessee, which is, again, kind of funny, Union Army guy.
Interesting way to become a colonel. Desert from the army and, switch sides.
And then leave again in the middle of a war and then move to Tennessee.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't seem like, but, as we've said, the opinions of Irish Americans toward the Union cause swung wildly during the war as they started to realize they were being used as cannon fodder. And he's in Tennessee after the war in 1865, 1866, when he begins to collaborate with a group calling themselves the Fenian Brotherhood, an Irish fraternal group, but not just like a fun, let's get loaded group, although you got to imagine. There was some of that on
you do.
Of a Tuesday night.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like if I were walking through a town and there were posters for this group.
For the Fenian Brotherhood.
The Fenian Brotherhood. I wouldn't think, oh, what a delightful fraternal organization.
That must be a good time. I hope there's Celtic music.
No, I would steer clear.
I hope there's piping. No, you would be correct. They were a militant organization. Of course, the 1860s was a real kind of upswing of Irish political fervor against British rule. So home rule is very popular, even to the extent of armed uprisings beginning in Ireland during this decade.
Right, okay.
You can take the boys out of Ireland, but you cannot take angry anti-British sentiment out of
the boys.
Mm-hmm. The Fenian, I assumed this was related to current, I don't speak Gaelic, I assumed it was like related to Sinn Féin.
You would think.
It appears to be entirely unrelated. Sinn Féin means we ourselves. It's some kind of a pronoun, whereas Fenian comes from
Sherilyn Fenn?
It comes from Sherilyn Fenn. All these guys could tie a cherry stem with their tongue. No, it comes from Fianna. I'm sure I'm not saying that the way a Gael would, but that's these are the legendary Irish warriors that fought with Finn MacCool in Irish cycles of myth.
Right, I see.
So this is like a real kind of nationalist.
The Three Collas.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know what that is.
Well, you know, it's my people are descendant from the Three Collas, Ken. We have a very specific genetic marker.
Is this the Welsh equivalent?
Well, no, they came to Wales from Ireland. Mm. See, this is what I would be saying to an Irish pub owner if I were in Dublin. I wouldn't want to bore you, but I would for sure bore him.
And he would not put up with it, you're saying?
Well, I think they're very polite. I think they endure it. they're just like, by the way,
tell
if you're
me more.
Coming,
So Fenian comes from this nationalist kind of term of ancestral Irish pride, and they're a sister organization of the Irish Republican Brotherhood, which I think would be the Ireland-based branch. But they have the same aim, like, even though we're way over here in the mountains of Tennessee or wherever we are, how do we bring down the crown? You know, that's what we always think, right?
That checks out.
And John O'Neill is one of a few men who devise a plan. You're laughing already.
Well, I love just that phrase. He's one of the few men. There were a lot of right. men who wanted this.
Well,
only a few had a plan.
I don't want to credit him with having the idea, but the leaders of the Fenian Brotherhood decide the surest way to achieve Irish independence, and I'm sure you and I have the same plan for Northern Ireland.
I'm thinking of my plan.
I can't believe George, what's his name, didn't have this in mind in wherever those talks were. Oslo?
Libya?
Walla Walla? Mm. Benghazi?
Mm. Bilbao?
Impossible to say. Yeah, probably Bilbao. They knew that the surest way to secure Irish independence would be to invade Canada.
Invade Canada!
Right? It solves everything. Their idea was, if we could...
Because it is England.
That's right, because it's not Canada. I mean, it's the province of Canada. But if we can invade the Queen's... Is it Victoria at this point? Probably, right?
Yeah.
If we can invade the Queen's territory of Canada, then we will be able to successfully ransom that for Ireland. Because we don't want... Nobody wants Canada.
Oh, wow. What a good idea. We're going to steal... The second largest country in the world.
It's a Nicolas Cage level heist. It's like Gru stealing the moon.
All 700 of us.
I got to steal the Dominion of Canada.
Are going to steal Canada and ransom it for Ireland.
We are drunk Irish veterans with farming implements.
But they're in America and they're displeased. They don't want to be Americans anymore. They want to go back and they want to take Idaho potatoes with them. And recolonize their own country.
I guess. I mean, maybe some of them are happy in the New World, but they still feel this ancestral tie. You know, and to a degree, as we'll see, they're kind of forming a government in exile. Because the surprising thing about this plot is that the Andrew Johnson administration is on board.
Is this one of these, like, Liberia situations where it's like...
Get rid of these guys.
You know why? Why don't you go
There's an awful lot of Irishmen in New York right now.
We'll support you if you form a different country.
It seems to be more anti... Well, there's two... I think the government has two aims here. One is this anti-British hysteria around the Alabama claims and other leftover Civil War issues.
Right.
But there's also just the idea that America has manifest destiny to spread, and why just west? Why not northwest?
Sure.
If we could just get rid of those pesky British troops quartered in Canada.
So it's an enemy of my enemy is my friend situation.
I think that's pretty much it. And it's not like we're going to send troops, but guns are supplied to these guys. And why was that?
So it's like a Bay of Pigs.
Right. And in fact, it's a Bay of Pigs of Canada.
Yeah. It's like
a Lake Erie of pigs. Uh-huh. I think we should try this again.
What's the French word for pig?
Cochon?
Yeah, cochon.
Yeah.
I said almost that. Le bas de cochon.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And I think that's right.
Yeah, that's as right as we're going to get.
We're going to get letters. If not. I think it's Valle de los Cochinos in actual Cuba.
Yeah.
Which is what I call Spanish-speaking Cuba.
Yeah, because
Guantanamo Bay, not actual Cuba.
You are fluent in Spanish, and so you take every opportunity.
So there's actually at this, and the Johnson administration is actually kind of treating these Irish Americans as a government in exile. There is in New York City,
a government of Ireland in exile. What do the Irish think of it? Oh, they're also colonized by the British.
Exactly.
They have no government.
There is no government.
Ah.
So, you know, where it can't be in Dublin, why not have it in New York City? There's probably as many Irish guys there at the moment.
Makes as much sense as anything.
So they've got a president and a constitution. They've got currency. There's, you know, the little Ireland of New York City at this time actually is a lot like de Gaulle's resistance.
Uh-huh. Well, and I wonder if that actually did pacify the Irish from rioting in New York. Was it a thing where it was like, okay, I know you guys are mad about the Five Corners or whatever, but hey, here's a way you can channel that energy.
Make some fake script and sell it at your own pubs.
So did this... Okay, go on. I don't want to jump ahead.
Okay. So they've got kind of tacit government approval for this wacko plan. John O'Neill says, he reasons thus, Canada is a province of Great Britain. The English flag floats over it, and English soldiers protect it. Wherever the English flag and English soldiers are found, Irishmen have a right to attack. So there's almost like a constitutional Lockean Rousseauian duty to invade Canada, which I feel many, many days.
So the Irish could invade colonial India
yes.
by that logic.
Yes. If in the potato famine they had all fled to Goa, for example.
But, you know, Barbados is right there. They could make Barbados an Irish colony. Can you imagine?
This all seems like the crazy proposals
Barbados.
To put Israel in,
Arizona.
In Sitka or Arizona or whatever.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
John O'Neill is joined by Civil War vets, officers. I think T.W. Sweeney might have been a general of some kind. He's a one-armed hero of Shiloh and the Battle of Atlanta. So, you know,
this is after the war.
This is 1866. Genuine Civil War heroes are dealing with...
Wait, Genuine was a Civil War hero?
Yeah, a lot of people don't know this because they loved Pony down there. They were like, we have ponies. There's not enough dance songs about ponies.
Huh?
They didn't really understand, I think.
No, I don't.
The lyrics.
Yeah.
So in May 1866, the Fenian Brotherhood sends 800 of their best Irish-American military vets to Buffalo, New York, to kind of line up at the border. And these folks, from what I can tell, call themselves the Irish Republican Army.
I've heard that somewhere.
It's the first time I can find any use of the phrase Irish Republican Army. Because the, you know, obviously the provisional IRA of the Troubles was a splinter group of the of the original Irish Republic's Irish Republican Army. But that's like a World War One era coinage. Sort
of, and they also didn't really know who to fight.
And so 60 years before, the first Irish Republican Army forms in Buffalo, New York, lining up along the border like they're about to play dodgeball.
How far apart would you have to be to line 800 people up against the border of Ontario and like cover, you know, with good coverage?
And nobody would notice, really, you know?
I bet all 800 of them work sort of in one
There's place. Only one guy can move on the line. You know, there's only one man in motion, of
right,
course.
Of course, right.
Or you get a flag.
They're running the option.
They head up this army of Fenian Brotherhood, these Fenian brothers, these brave sons of Erin, immediately head across the border and skirmish with troops up there, and they get some quick wins. They are outnumbered south of Niagara Falls and again in the streets of Fort Erie, but their guerrilla tactics prevail. They're wily veterans trained by Civil War combat,
right,
and they're going up against
a bunch of,
you know, kind of local regulars, you know, kind of irregulars, you know, call-ups and Toronto college boys, and it's no contest.
British soldiers that sat out the American Civil War.
The Fenians have some very quick wins. Now, I think as a moment's thought will reveal, 800 Irishmen crossing the border have a very slim chance of taking, even if you didn't know how this history winds up, a very slim chance of taking, as you say, what is now the second largest country on earth.
What is the short-term goal?
I think they can do it.
Right.
I mean, and when they get these quick, these are the first Irish victories over British soldiers since 1745. It's been a long drought. These guys are the Buffalo Bills of fighting the crown.
And are they thinking that they will inspire an uprising back in Ireland?
That's an interesting question. I almost think, you know, think about how slow communication would have been back then. I mean, it's probably good for morale, but really these guys are kind of doing their own thing. They are not being coordinated by Jerry Adams, you know, like, they're kind of in the hills of Tennessee calling their own shots like a bunch of domestic terrorists.
One doesn't get the sense that the later IRA was particularly coordinated by Jerry Adams. It's in the definition of the term.
So are you saying that no Irish violence is particularly coordinated?
I mean, it's coordinated my sense is multiple, from multiple hubs.
But their stated objective is, we just need to take over the province of Canada, again, now these slices of southern Ontario and Quebec,
right,
and ransom them. The crown will happily treat with us and give us Ireland because they'll be so eager to get the bounties of Canada back, which now that I say it out loud, it does seem a little unlikely. I'm sure Canada's good for business. That's where you're getting all your beaver pelts and maple sugar? Unclear. But
well, a lot of beaver pelts, but it's also, you know, full of gold.
Sure, it's full of gold.
But
think about the black eye it would be to lose Canada right next door, or to lose Ireland right next door. What does it profit a man if he gaineth Canada and loseth Ireland?
Well, I mean, think about this, though. The maritime provinces would not have been necessarily in play, and Quebec is standing between Canada and England, right? And Quebec in 1860, whatever, is not really Canada exactly either, right? So for the British to defend Canada, they have to get all the way up the St. Lawrence Seaway. It's like it's a trickier basket. But I see what you're saying, that if you're going to lose one, because you don't want to lose, it's not that the it's not that the British are going to think that the Irish are going to take Canada, but that the U.S. is going to flood in, and that's what they really don't want.
Yeah, I mean, if they were to have official government support. By the way, there is no French Canada.
At this point. There's a Canada that's full of French.
Yeah, they're still there. New Brunswick's full of Acadians, and Quebec is full of whatever you call Celine Dion's Catholic people.
Yeah.
But...
Québécois.
Les Québécois. The circus people. But... The Maritime
letters write themselves.
But yeah, the French holdings there are down to, as they are today, to Saint-Pierre and Miquelon, that little island off Newfoundland. So men flood north after these successful wins south of Niagara Falls and in the town of Fort Erie. And almost immediately, this turns out to be, as you would imagine, a fool's errand. It's a rout. New troops come in from Montreal. But what actually pivotally happens is the Johnson administration says, oh, no, we do not want this happening on our border. And they cut off Johnson cuts off the supply lines and, in fact, sends up Generals Grant and Meade, no less luminaries than Grant and Meade, up to Buffalo, New York, to try to get a handle, to stabilize the
situation. It really is
situation.
A bay of pigs, except for the Grant and Meade.
That's correct. They were using Irish immigrants instead of Cubans.
Grant and Meade sounds like a kind of wine cooler that might have been popular among sorority girls in the late 80s, early 90s.
I guarantee it. No, that's not what they said.
I guarantee it.
What did Bartles and James used to say?
Some folksy claptrap.
I think they said, I guarantee it, like the Men's Warehouse guy. They were selling wine coolers and bad suits.
Yeah, I feel like they were not real.
You think Bartles and James don't exist? This is your new conspiracy theory.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to do an omnibus on Bartles and James. On wine coolers.
You're going to get to the bottom of this.
Oh my God. You know, the first alcohol I ever willingly administered to myself was a wine cooler.
Don't you think that's what everyone our age would say?
I think so.
This is the equivalent of the boring my ancestors came from County Cork story.
I think it is. What was your first beer? A wine cooler.
So a disappointed John O'Neill, having been defeated, realizes it's over and he needs to make a run for the border back to the American side, the Buffalo side. He releases his POWs with a handshake and heads home with perhaps a moral victory, even if he didn't get the support he wanted on the geopolitical front.
So 50 people on either side either died of musket wounds or were captured, and then they shook hands and
I think it's fewer than I can't remember. I think it's fewer than a dozen deaths.
Yeah, okay.
On each side, I guess Wikipedia is good at this stuff. I think all told, during this and subsequent raids, there were a few dozen losses on both sides, and maybe twice as many captured.
I don't want to derail this, but have you noticed now when you ask the internet anything without wanting it? Google now is offering an AI
at the top
synopsis at the top.
Because this is what you would want more than human expertise. You would want a patched together.
Yeah.
This idea that...
it's filling me with rage.
AI becoming the new crypto, we have to get ahead of this, is... I never thought I would say this about anything, but it's worse than crypto. So the fact is, this is not the end of the Fenian raids, although this is their high watermark. Winning those two battles in the first couple nights is the high watermark of the Fenian Brotherhood's unsuccessful attempt to claim Canada. Huh. They, for a non-existent exiled Irish government. There are more raids in 1870 and 1871, again, masterminded by our friend Mr. O'Neill, still burning with rage toward the English.
Oh, so he's like, oh, I'm done, and then he's back at it?
Well, you know, he goes back to the Brotherhood Hall, and they nurse their beers and share some war stories. But the dream is still alive, John.
Okay, all right.
They are turned back in an attempt to take Quebec. They've tried Canada West, and now they're going to try Canada East, so they try to go in from Vermont this time. It's like trying to take out a tumor. You know, you can choose where you go in. Are you going to go in from Buffalo? Are you going to go in from Vermont?
It's up there especially, it's a pretty unguarded border in the sense that...
Well, to this day.
Unless there was a little shack there, which there is, now on the roads in between Vermont and Canada, you wouldn't even know that you were crossing.
Yeah, when I say his incursion wasn't successful, it doesn't mean he was beaten back for a loss of yardage at the border.
It means that he got over there.
He did get into Canada and then had no military success whatsoever, right. Tried to steal a horse and failed.
There were a few people standing around with pitchforks like, huh? We were just pitching this hay.
It actually gets a little worse. In 1871, having failed in Vermont and Canada East, O'Neill has a new tack. He decides, what if we led a raid? He actually resigns from the Fenian Brotherhood to do his own thing. He wants to lead his own raid between, wait for it, Minnesota and Manitoba.
I've been to that border too, and whoo, you'd have to look around for somebody.
Well,
to
think
fight.
About it in 1871. Well, he has an objective. I guess there's a customs house there. Hmm. The problem is his intel is bad. 35 men led by John O'Neill seize a Canadian customs house, which unfortunately, due to some confusion at the time, turns out to be on our side of the border.
Winnipeg is impossible to find if you don't take the road.
A survey problem leads to him taking a Canadian customs house that is, in fact, not in Canada.
And don't you think those people were like, hey,
listen,
look at the flag.
And he's like, yeah, sure. That's what a Canadian would say. The Fenian raids, although kind of a historical curio and interesting in context, do nothing to advance, sadly, the cause of Irish home rule. Hmm. But interestingly, they make a big difference for Canada. Many historians, at the same time, roughly the same time as John O'Neill planning his raid from Buffalo into what's now modern day Ontario, a similar raid was happening in the Maritimes in Campobello Island, which later made famous by FDR and the St. Lawrence. And this was beaten back, but this meant that this was a war of multiple fronts. And the Maritime provinces, like New Brunswick, the Maritime colonies, I guess, at the time, like New Brunswick, I think they called them provinces, like New Brunswick and Nova Scotia, were the ones most opposed to Confederation, as you can imagine.
Sure, of course.
These are the hardy, flinty, independent sea people.
They didn't really want to be part of Canada until much later.
They still don't.
I guess not.
In many cases.
They keep making pop bands and sending them, you know, just to Sloan. The rest of us.
Just Sloan.
Well, no, Alves is from out there, too.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Do they actually call it Alves like
no,
I do?
I don't think so. I think they
say Do they know Alves. What percentage of Americans call them Alves?
I'm not sure. I've seen them this summer.
It's got to be over 50%.
Alves?
Oh, I wanted to go to that show. They're opening for Built to Spill, right?
No, it's a separate show. They're their own headliners now at the zoo.
Oh, nice.
But it's like 2 days after Built to Spill, so it's a real indie rock wall.
These are the shows I can hear from my house where I'm the wind is right, but I'm going to be out of the country. I'm bummed to miss Built to Spill at the zoo.
That's the thing.
Because, you know, I've been to places where I can see Built to Spill, and I've been to places where I can see snow leopards.
Yep, and but you've been to the zoo.
I have never seen Built to Spill and snow leopards at the same location.
Maybe you're in the wrong part of the zoo. I bet you there's a snow leopard at the zoo you could have seen and seen Built to Spill.
Well, I could have. Built to Spill has never been at the zoo.
Where are you going to see snow leopards?
At the zoo. What I'm saying is no built-to-spill venue, in my experience, has ever had
snow leopards.
And sun bears. And zebras.
Right, sun bears.
Sun bears.
I thought you were suggesting that you would be out of town because you were on a snow leopard safari.
No.
Oh, no. Wow, you really dismissed that possibility.
I have friends that want to do that kind of stuff. No, I'm going to be in the UK.
Yeah.
So the cause of Canadian Confederation, which had been mooted for many years between these provinces, like we shouldn't be the province of Canada and the province of New Brunswick and the province of Nova Scotia. We should be a vast, strong Canadian Confederation. That actually happens in 1867. And a lot of it, historians say, is because of the threats of outside violence from actors like this Fenian Brotherhood.
Really?
So-called.
So this is, and so they were like, let's put on red tunics with gold buttons and march the whole distance.
Who is they saying this?
The Canadians.
Yes.
The Mounties.
Exactly.
Yeah, they were like, we're a thing now.
We're stronger together.
We're not just an archipelago of things. We are a thing.
And it's still very different from the map of Canada, we imagine. It's now just this little stripe of the Great Lakes plus Nova Scotia and New Brunswick.
That's the Canada, I imagine.
Is that's your canonical Canada?
I feel like the rest of Canada should be just a Native American or a Native North American territory.
Exactly. Yeah. First Nations. If you're from that part of Canada, if you're from that close to Toronto, you should cheer from the Blue Jays. Nobody from Rupert's Land or the Northwest Territories should be troubling us.
They got one baseball team.
Yeah.
They Mariners. Used to have two.
The Mariners are closer to Canada than the Blue Jays are. So much of Canada. Mariners are closer to you than the Blue Jays are. But the Mariners are not owned by a vast Canadian telecom conglomerate, sadly.
Yeah. That's why the Seahawks are the football team of Alaska.
Correct.
But for whatever reason, Hawaii roots for the 49ers? That makes me mad.
Cultural, probably Asian American cultural ties between the Bay Area and...
I suppose, but we have a lot of Asian American cultural ties up here too. It makes me, when I'm down there and I see 49ers stuff, I'm like, come on, Seahawks.
There's one Seahawks guy on Maui with like a 12 on his right. You may have seen it on the highway into Kihei and Wailea.
Yeah.
And that guy is fighting the good fight.
He is.
That guy's the Fenian Brotherhood of Maui.
And that concludes the Fenian Raids. Entry 461.DE2849, certificate number 12129 in the omnibus. Futurelings, social media, just like the Irish cause in Canada, died an inglorious death, although many years later, 100 years later, more. 150 years after
the dream of an
Irish ransoming of Canada perished, so too did the dream of a peaceful and verdant land on social media where people were funny and sweet to one another. Why you would go there now, why you would spend any time on social media, of course that wasn't like the peaceful, verdant enclaves of one small part of Instagram and I guess my Facebook page. All other Facebook is toxic, but...
The problem is social media was always worse than the weirdo blogs that preceded it, right? Remember a time when there were no walled gardens and the internet would just be like, I'm one guy and I am really into this mothballed aircraft carrier.
Yeah, but I couldn't navigate those things. I couldn't understand...
You had Yahoo... groups.
They all had these 6-bit animations at the bottom, mm-hmm. like somebody's toolkit dancing.
Dancing hamsters. That's how you knew you were seeing quality expert content.
No, but you remember the original social media. Boy, it seemed like we were going to make a better world.
It was fun.
Anyway, that's not true now, so avoid it at all costs. But if you do go there, go only to see at Ken Jennings, at John Roderick, and at Omnibus Project. But a better way to communicate with us is to email us all of your Hibernian gossip and frustration that we don't like the Blue Jays or that Ken is against Australia to theomnibusproject@gmail.com. That's a real email address. And every month and a half or so, either Ken or Mindy actually reads those things, and any one of those letters that actually mentions me.
A couple times a year, a letter will mention you.
Yeah, and then they will forward it on to me without comment. So then all of a sudden in my inbox, there will be an email that says, Ken, I really want to compliment you on this show and also John.
Do you really want me to say, see attached?
No, I would like...
This email mentions you.
I'd like there to be some sort of commentary where you say like, oh, hey, John, this person, look at this person.
That's what the addenda show is. Just assume every such email from me says, look at this guy.
Yeah, I guess that's right.
Look at this guy.
But it sometimes feels like a bot, like a chat bot where it's like, oh, they wrote some script where it just...
I have a little Perl script. For my name. If it sees you, it forwards it.
So that's theomnibusproject@gmail.com. You can find on Facebook and in the various Reddits, subreddits, and Discords and so forth.
Discordia?
Groups of futurelings who congregate. You know, the other day, mm-hmm. I was at the... it's not really apropos to this... But
that's a promising start.
The Bastille Day celebration at our local French restaurant. And I met an Omnibus listener who actually lives in Berlin And she said, I'm just visiting Seattle for a weekend. That's crazy. Were the chances I would run into you at this French restaurant?
She was at Pichet?
She was at Pichet. And she said she listened to every episode. And
is she a native German speaker?
No, she is an English-speaking person. And I said, have you learned German? And she said, no, not really. I just live in one of the big cities of the world, and everybody speaks English there.
It's true.
And any young person in Germany speaks English. And I was like, you know, it's funny. They all spoke Russian when I went there the first time. She was like, I'm much younger than you, and I cannot relate to this anecdote.
At this point, they all speak English if they're in their 40s even. Like in most of Europe.
And so I said to her,
it has to be a very old postmistress indeed.
And from only one half of Germany. But I said, are you a futureling? And she was like, no. As though a millennial, or I mean, I think she's millennial, not Gen Z, but she was like, no, to be a futureling is to be like a older omnibus listener. We younger omnibus listeners.
They have their own name?
Well, no. I just think she said, well, I'm not going to, I would not describe myself as a future.
She doesn't want to join any group that would have her as a member?
I feel like there's a little bit of age discernment there where it was like,
If you're a listener under 30, does that include her? Does that scoop her up?
I think she's 35. I think she's under 30.
If you're a listener under 30 and you also chafe at the futureling nomenclature, we need to know why and what your suggested replacement is.
Yeah, is there a name for younger
futurelings? What are TikTok omnibus listeners called?
I may have told you this story, but I was in Estonia and somebody wrote me and said, oh, you're in Estonia, do you want to get coffee? I'm a listener. And I met the person for coffee. They were, as you can imagine, a tech-oriented person, young and, you know, cool looking. We sat in a cafe for half of a lunch. And at one point I said, well, it's just wonderful to come here to Estonia and meet a fan. And he said, oh, wait, I didn't say I was a fan. And I said, well, you listen to my shows and you like my band, which is like that's the double whammy, right? If you do one and not the other, like, I get it. But if you do both,
even if he only did one, he would just be a fan of the shows he's a fan of something.
But it's a very European thing to say, like, well, no, I'm not a fan.
Ceci n'est pas un fan.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, all right. Sorry.
Yeah, it's mutual now, buddy. I'm not really a fan either.
You can send us actual mail. I see Ken is over there fidgeting with the mail to P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington, 98155.
Oh, do you want a little update on that?
The P.O. Box?
The address.
Oh.
That address still works because it's what everyone uses. But that post office moved from North City to Aurora like years and years ago. And what I didn't know is, I think the zip code is now 98133.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, apparently 155 is still delivered because a lot of those P.O. boxes predate the move.
Yeah.
But it's a little island of extraterritorial. It's a principality of Sealand. It's a little dot of 98155 in the middle of 98133.
P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington. If you said 98133, would it also find its way to this?
Perhaps quicker.
I see. Oh, all right. Well, should I change that in what I read?
I don't know. What if we just do a new zip code every time? Sometimes it's 3553, 220, 221, whatever it takes.
Yeah.
We have a couple postcards here. Lou sent this from the bottom of the Grand Canyon. I don't know where you buy a view of the bottom of the Grand Canyon while you're at the bottom of the Grand Canyon.
I'm going to go ahead and say that Lou did not buy that in the bottom of the Grand Canyon or mail it from the bottom of the Grand Canyon.
He says he listened to Turtle Soup while in a campground at the Grand Canyon. Patreon early release. Show off. He's a Tuesday guy.
Well done.
Bring on 17 kinds of shrimp. Okay. We'll triangulate your location from this postcard and...
There are no shrimp in the Colorado River either.
That's why he needs us to bring it on.
Oh, I see. Bring on the shrimp.
Yes.
But I bet you there are turtles down there.
You think there's turtles?
There's turtles everywhere.
In the desert? Yeah, probably. Desert turtles.
It's always wet. It's not like
but those would be tortoises. They're not... Do you think there's turtles in the Colorado River of Arizona?
I don't know. Maybe not.
Who knows more than this? If you are a herpetologist, is that right? Or is that just snakes?
If you've been Well, I mean, reptile.
I think it's all reptiles.
If you've been to the bottom of the Colorado River, because I don't think you have to be a herpetologist to have rafted down the river.
If you've been in the river and have not seen a turtle, please do not let us know. That is not dispositive.
Oh, I see. But only if you have.
If you have seen a turtle while rafting the Colorado, the mighty Colorado, we would like to hear. Again, P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline 98155 and or 33. And then we got this other note from... Oh, I kind of vaguely... Of all the people who think we hate them... I kind of forgot the North Dakotans were up in arms at one point.
Oh, really? I love North Dakota.
We all love North Dakota. Not me. I've never been there. Never would. Wouldn't be caught dead there.
No, that's right. It's one of the states you haven't visited.
It's true. And I think that really rankled someone because we occasionally get defenses of North Dakota, I think from Sharon.
This happens this more woman. Often than just one time?
It's been a while, but we used to hear... From I believe this North
These
Dakota.
Are the letters that you don't send to me.
It's a picture of a water cooler in Grand Forks with a smiley face and a bow tie. Mm-hmm. And this, I believe, is the leading tourist attraction in North Dakota. Because otherwise, why would Sharon...
The thing is that Grand Forks, like Fargo, are...
Is.
Is are. Oh, Grand Forks is, right. I guess the forks are...
If the river has multiple forks.
Grand Forks, because it's visible from Minnesota.
I thought you were going to say space.
It's also visible from space if you look closely enough. But, you know, I feel like North Dakota, I feel like central North Dakota, Bismarck, Jamestown.
Yes.
These are the
heartland of North Dakota.
Yeah, I mean, Fargo actually has a half of it in Minnesota. It's like East St. Louis.
Yes.
And so, and I'm, you know, Grand Forks.
You're saying Grand Forks shouldn't count?
No, it counts. It's just, it's a border town. Part of Grand Forks is over in Minnesota.
Is it a wretched hive of scum and villainy like Windsor and...
They all are. There's an Air Force base in Grand Forks, I guess.
That's true. Sharon says, time to think of North Dakota and make plans to visit this diverse, wondrous state.
I mean, diverse.
What could be more diverse than North Dakota? It's got... Native Americans and oil guys.
Yeah.
It's both kinds of people.
Geographically, like, not especially diverse.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
It all
looks like that. I think we're going to hear from people telling us the Montana side looks nothing like the Minnesota side. But yeah. I wouldn't know. Mm-mm. Never been there. Don't care to.
Sort of.
Then there's a cryptic, tell me what you interpret here. John's daughter might wish to submit a pun that may or may not be a pun as an addition to your podcast. I don't know what that's a reference to, but do you think she would like to submit a questionable pun?
You know, as she gets a little bit older, right, she's more and more interested in...
not making puns.
No, I think more and more interested in sort of inserting herself into any kind of media property that she can. And, you know, when you showed up over here today, the first thing she said was...
She was listening to Omnibus.
Yeah, she's like, I just
in the car
to Omnibus.
I was like, honey, you don't have to do that. You can hear your dad talk about nothing anytime.
That's true.
But she just loves you. She picked two of your shows. That's true love.
But she said it was accidental. Like for like for most of our listeners, there wasn't a lot of intention. I mean, I guess Spirit Lake has a slightly different culture.
Thank you for your note, Sharon. I do plan on making it to North Dakota, and I can't wait to see your famous state mascot, the water tower with a smiley face and a bow tie.
You know what's interesting about Western North Dakota?
Nothing.
They dam the Missouri River.
Good job.
And so there's a giant lake, but as far... So I wanted to take a canoe down the Missouri. I thought it would be a wonderful thing to do to torture my teenager. This is back when I didn't have a teenager. And I thought, you know what I'll do? We'll start in the headwaters of the Missouri and we'll go the whole length of the river all the way down to New Orleans.
Wow.
In a boat. And then I read some accounts of it. And what happens is you get to North Dakota and the water doesn't move.
Can't you just start there?
Well, yeah, but that's not the whole, if you had did the whole thing.
Well, you can't do the whole thing in a boat. I'm sure it's a mountain stream at some point.
Well, yeah, you have to do a little bit of portaging at the front. But what I'm saying is that you get to North Dakota and it's this incredibly long canoe slog because it's this huge like body of water that doesn't move, and there's also nothing to see because it's out in the prairie, and so you're just paddling all day.
They should have outboard motors. to rent there.
That's what
I slap one on your canoe. Skip the boring part.
You could, for like 4 days.
You could fish. Yeah, 4 days.
Five horsepower.
Well, I mean, if you're not into boredom on water, this doesn't seem like it was going to be the trip for you anyway.
Well, that's the thing. I kind of backed off of it as an idea.
Because now you have a real teenager, and I haven't really heard this come up much in your travel plans.
No, that's the thing. Because even getting her to like go walk around the mall. I tried the other day. I was like, you want to just go to the mall and walk around? That's what I did as a teenager. And she's like, neither you nor I like to shop. Mom likes to shop. We go to the mall. But I don't like to shop, and either do you. What would we do at the mall? And boy, she had me there.
You could go to Shake Shack.
Yeah.
I guess. I'm just trying to help. Hot topic?
Anyway, canoeing down the Missouri River is like, I can't even get her to go to the movies. So,
I do think that mall is now full of like Japanese stuff stores and fake American Japanese stuff stores.
Yeah, where it's like, hey, 99 cents you can get a baby spoon, or 99 cents you can get a pair of chopsticks
that Daiso.
Have little bears on
but
them.
But plus all of our retail chains closed, and so now it's just places selling Dragon Ball Z figurines.
Every single thing is garbage now.
Oh, I was going to say it was better.
No, I don't think
Hickory Farms of Ohio is gone, and now you can get Dragon Ball Z figurines. That's no contest. No contest.
I think even the Abercrombie & Fitch, which I hate. Oh, I saw this the other day. You're going to love this. When Abercrombie & Fitch rebranded at some point, you know, it used to be like a Eddie Bauer, like East Coast, you'd get wool jackets to go fishing type of place.
And now it's like sexy.
Well, no, it got rebranded as like sexy clothes. But I read a thing like a Gen Z thing the other day that said formerly really great, expensive, cool, old fashioned brands like mid-2000s Abercrombie & Fitch now are making garbage clothes. They're not even, you know, they're not the former bastions of quality that they were in 2014.
Wow.
And I was like, oh my God, this is...
You were not ready for Old Navy nostalgia?
I really was not. It's exactly what it is. Old Navy, back when they, you know...
Back when that was good stuff. I can't believe how good this $8 polo shirt is.
What I want you to do, listeners, what I want is for you to... subscribe to our Patreon. Our Patreon is where you're going to get the show 2 days early, every one of our shows 2 days early on a Tuesday instead of a Thursday, and so much other content, including the addenda show where Ken actually reads letters that refer to me.
That's why I can't spoil you in your inbox.
Yeah.
Because it's going to come up on the addenda show.
He sends me the ones that say,
"Don't
read this
on air." John
is very wrong.
I think I send you the ones that are not really for on-air consumption.
Oh, I see.
Like if it's like, hey, tell John this fact about Point Barrow, Alaska, I'm going to be like, I will, on the air.
Right.
But if they say, here's a very personal story about addiction that I want John to know, that one I will email you.
That does happen sometimes. That's very gratifying.
But first I read it. It's none of my business, but I read it.
Well, it says Omnibus at the top.
I guess.
And you, my friend, are Omnibus.
I am Omnibus.
Anyway, go to patreon.com/omnibusproject and pledge at the $5 level, and all things will be revealed.
Do it right now. Like, do something fun today. Give yourself a little treat today. Listeners, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. Among the things we hope and pray will never come are the catastrophe that we fear. But if the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word to you. But if Providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.